This is Emmett Cull from Robotiek.
I'm joined for this podcast by Gurvinder Virk, a professor of robotics at the University of Gävle in Sweden. Virk also works with the ISO as part of a group that has already developed standards for robots and plans to develop more. Thanks for joining us today, Gurvinder. It's nice to have you.
Oh, thank you, Emmett. It's great to be with you and thanks for having me.
Could I begin by asking, what are robot standards exactly?
That's an interesting question. There are many purposes for having robot standards, but the kind of things we're talking about here are international ISO or IEC standards, which are meant to try and get the whole global community in the world focused and aligned on a particular technology. In this case, it's robotics and in particular to do with robots, how robots should be made and designed and sold so that they are safe. So in this case, we're talking about robot safety standards.
And for those trying to get a sense of the importance of ISO standards, could you explain to listeners where ISO standards fit into the overall legal and regulatory scene that robot makers must comply with?
Robot safety standards are, most standards are actually voluntary, but governments can adopt them as part of laws and regulations in different regions. In terms of robot safety standard, they are normally complying to various EC directives, which are law within Europe. And so if you have a robot safety standards and you have it harmonized, what that essentially means is that if you demonstrate and comply with ISO harmonized standard in Europe, you will have a way of demonstrating compliance to a European directive. And that can be quite important in terms of if you've had an accident regarding your product and you're up in front of some litigation case and so on. So I think many other regions are working towards adopting a similar based approach where the voluntary standard will be deemed to comply with some kind of law or regulation within the region, because the European model seems to be liked by most countries.
So the role of ISO standards varies in different jurisdictions?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Most countries will adopt it, and there will be some way of demonstrating some kind of compliance and ensuring that the manufacturer has some protection from litigation, as long as they can demonstrate that they have complied with all the requirements that are stated. Because the requirements are stated as a shall. You shall do this, and you shall do that. So it's a normative requirement. And if you don't demonstrate that you have complied, then you will have problems, of course, only when there's an accident or something like that.
We've spoken before, of course, back in 2014, when ISO 13482, the standard for personal care robots, was published. Can you tell listeners how you defined personal care robot, what the aims of that standard were, and provide a few examples of standards that were set out in the final document?
Before this 13482 was published, the only requirements we had were for industrial robots, which are used for manufacturing. Now, these industrial robots are very powerful and very precise machines used for very, very quality assured manufacturing processes. They require a certain type of requirements which have been published for many years. Now, for the last 15 or so years, the world has been to look at new types of robots, which are loosely described as service robots. So they are not used for manufacturing, but they're used for providing services to people. Now, industrial robots and service robots differ essentially in the way what they are designed to do. Industrial robots are designed for manufacturing, service robots for providing services. Now, as a subset of service robots, personal care robots were deemed to be quite important, because these are robots that we are supposed to be using in our homes and helping us in a whole variety of things, everyday things, from helping us do work that we can't do or actually doing the work for us. So in that sense, three types of personal care robots have been defined. First of all, I should sort of say what the definition of the personal care robot is, as you asked. The key words in a personal care robot is that it's a service robot that improves directly the quality of life of a human. So you can see that improvement in quality of life in a variety of ways. The standard has defined three types of personal care robots. The first is called a mobile servant robot, which essentially is a domestic butler type machine. So it will do some tasks within your home, things like vacuum cleaning robot like the Roombas and the things that we have come to see. The lawnmower type robot could also be fitting this thing, or maybe some more humanoid type robots which will do maybe fetch something from the refrigerator for you or something like that. Then the second one is called a physical assistant robot. So this is a robot that physically helps the human to do a particular task. I guess the most interesting one I could mention here is maybe a wearable exoskeleton for an elderly person would be what fits in here. So as we age, we maybe can't move around as easily as we could when we were young. And so having a physical assistant robot and you wear it could help you move around and do manipulation tasks. The final third type is called a person carrier robot. And this is essentially a transportation type mechanism for personal mobility. Essentially seen to be off highway, so in the home or on the pavement, going shopping or something like that. But it could also be on the highway, but then it would also need to comply with the normal car rules and regulations. So the kind of driverless cars that we're hearing could also be seen as person carrier robots.
Can you provide a couple of examples of specific standards that were set out just to give listeners an idea of the kind of standards that manufacturers have to meet?
Oh, there are many standards to do with quality, to do with safety, the kind of risk assessment you have to carry out. For industrial robots, the industrial manufacturers have to comply with the ISO 10218 parts 1 and 2. We have the 13482 that I'm already talking about. Then there is an ISO 12100 which deals with the risk management process that manufacturers have to follow to ensure that the scenario that they're dealing with for identifying hazards and how those hazards are mitigated against, the kind of protection measures one has to adopt, has to be complied with.
In your view, what impact has the ISO 13482 standard had in the past year, and how is the impact of a standard measured?
It takes a little bit of time, especially when we have a standard like the 13482, which is quite different from the only other robot standard, the 10218 part 1 and 2. So we have, as my committee has been working on how the information about the new standard can be disseminated more widely so manufacturers know about it and how they can adopt it. And also the regulators also need to be informed. In fact, the only country right now who has really rolled out, although it's coming up to not nearly 2 years, the standard, is Japan. Japan has produced and certified robots to the new standard. And in Europe, we have products, but we do not have test houses or certification bodies who are able to certify to the new standard. I believe Korea is soon going to be implementing the certification processes, as is China. But US, Europe is lagging quite far behind, I'm afraid, in terms of implementing the new standard. I am being approached by many European small companies who have robots which fits this new personal care sector, but in fact they cannot find organization who will certify to the new standard.
I've heard that there are calls for this standard to be reviewed. Is that unusual? I mean, it's only a year or so old.
This is quite normal. Normally, a standard is reviewed anyway after 5 years, and then a formal decision is made. Is everything the same? In which case, nothing is done. Now, because this standard is so new, the feeling, and I think I have the same feeling, that perhaps that there are some refinements needed and some tweaking here and there. We have reviewed this need. Should we be looking at reviewing it already? And again, only Japan was of the opinion that we should review it, because the other countries are still lagging and feel that, in fact, they have not gained any new information in these 2 years or year and a half since the publication. And so there's a kind of urgency developing in Europe and US that we should just be getting to grips with what 13482 is saying. Are there any issues with it? What knowledge have we gained? And how should this new knowledge be gained to reviewing it? So we have decided, as Japan is the only country, then really the rest of the world doesn't actually have new information to review it. And so we have decided not to review it for the moment.
Can you tell listeners about the standards that your group is working on right now?
Yeah, WG7, in fact, there's a new technical committee going to be formed within ISO focusing on robotics. My group will be renumbered. It was Working Group 7. It will become Working Group 2, but its title will still be the same, Personal Care Robots. And as part of this rolling out process, we have been working on two technical reports to complement the 13482. Both of these technical reports are trying to provide more information to the community. First one is called the application guide. So how should 13482 be used? It's like user's guide to it. Why did the group do this and why did the group do that and so on. And also it looks at when you are creating new types of robots and there are old types of robots, there are issues like boundary issues. How do you know you're not an industrial robot and you're a service robot or a personal care robot? So there are issues of boundaries and overlaps and things are being created. So the application guide gives some guidance on these new things which are arising in the world of robotics. And the second project that my group is looking at is how should test houses be assessing and testing the various safety clauses in 13482. And this is really to help the community again to provide test procedures which everybody can accept and adopt and help maybe Europe and the countries that are lagging, as I mentioned previously. So those two projects are really meant to really speed up the process of the community adopting the standard.
Two topics we're particularly interested in this podcast series are industrial safety and collaborative human-robot interactions. With that in mind, I'm wondering what unique challenges do collaborative robots or cobots present, and how do they differ from those presented by personal care robots?
Well, there are industrial robots area is also trying to work towards having a human-robot collaboration. And personal care robots, by definition, have this human-robot collaboration implicit in their genome, as it were. So the two sectors are trying to make the same thing happen, i.e. robots and humans share the same workspace. For industrial robots, it's a little bit more challenging because industrial robots are very, very powerful robots, and how to make that power and human share the same workspace requires the robots to really have a lot of monitoring and assessing and when the human is near it, so how the robot should behave and things like that. For service robots and personal care robots, normally these machines are much, much less powerful. But of course, if these become as powerful as industrial robots, then exactly the same safety requirements need to apply.
In your view, what are the most important principles behind a safe collaborative human-robot implementation?
In an industrial setting, the requirement has got to be how does the human improve the manufacturing process? Now, if that human is absolutely essential to be there, then the collaboration has got to be facilitated to make sure that the human, no harm can come to the human while he or she improves that manufacturing process. If the human can add value, then ways need to be found because it is not a trivial matter. And I know the Working Group 3 dealing with industrial robot safety has been tackling this issue for over 5 years. And although they are developing some technical specification, I think they are still quite far from achieving a solution that will be widely accepted and adopted within industry. So that I think the vision is to have a kind of a production line. At the moment, you have a robot, you know, a chain of robots doing task one and then pass to the robot two to do task two and so on. And the image that they have projecting is a manufacturing line of something, a human, robot. And so a robot then passing the work to a human who then does his bit and then passes on to the next robot requires a fair bit of analysis and consideration. If the robots are not very powerful, then maybe it's okay. But if they are very powerful, then something needs to be provided in terms of the workspaces handed from the human to the robot and vice versa.
You've answered all my questions, Gurvinder. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Well, robots and humans are definitely going to be co-sharing the space. I think the whole community really wants this to happen. It has to be done in a coherent way. And I think the only way we can achieve that is that I think the international community should really work together to define those rules, and then how those requirements and rules should be rolled out and defined, I think, needs to be done holistically. It can't be done piecemeal by one region or one country. And that's why I think international discussion and collaboration is essential for this to happen right now for the area of robotics.
It's been fascinating talking to you today, Gurvinder. Many thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And I hope it's been interesting for you and the listeners. Thank you very much.